The following program is being broadcast on the Amazing Women of Power, the world's leading positive programming network, powered by Raven International. This show contains motivational language and may not be suitable for negative listeners.
Dreams. I've had enough of these annoying and distracting schemes. I'll choose my friends because apparently they're choosing me. The time is now to pay attention to my destiny.
From his humble studio in Orange County, California, comes a young songwriter with a dream, encouraging others to go after their dreams. Learning from the best in the business and passing it along to you, it's Strong Rider on the radio.
I had the blues, but I made it better, baby. And that's why I wrote this song. And now you can sing along.
My mind's made up to bring you some more Tanya. That is right, Tanya Blunt is the guest that we had on last episode. We had to cut it short because this is only a half an hour show. So let's bring you the conclusion coming up right away. But let me introduce myself. My name is Dean Olson, and I am the Strong Writer on the radio. I try my best to keep songwriters and artists musically fit. And the way I love to do that is through faith and encouragement. And when you have a guest like the two people who make up the War and Treaty, which are Michael Trotter Jr. and Tanya Blunt, his beautiful wife, they have faith and encouragement in spades, plus some incredible music, which you must check out at thewarandtreaty.com. I want to get right back into this interview, this conversation that we had. When we last left it, Tanya had given me the backstory on her days as an actress, specifically in the movie Sister Act 2, Back in the Habit, starring Whoopi Goldberg, and then going on to her days as a Polydor recording artist, and we talked a little bit about that. And then we talked about Michael and how she formed the War and Treaty with him, singing and touring as a married couple. And then we got to the part where we discussed the beginnings of their company, and Tanya picks up the story right where we left off. Here you go. Here's Tanya.
Yeah, and we have a company we started called Red Stream Music, and all these songs and different artists and things like that. Michael is his brainchild to produce different artists and write different artists and of all genres of music. And so Red Stream's first artist will be of course, the War and Treaty, and then my brother.
That's wonderful. So that's where Red Stream comes from. I thought maybe it was something that you two dreamed up together. So.
Yep.
So you tried to do crowdfunding, Indiegogo, I think Mike told me.
Yeah, yeah, we tried to do that a while back, and it wasn't something that I don't know, as a solo artist, if it was something I really wanted to do. You know, life has a way of just connecting the dots for you.
Yes, it does.
And, yeah, and I actually, as a solo artist, I'm like, I don't know if I really want to do an Indiegogo thing. So we tried it, and we got a little support behind it and things like that as a solo artist. But I was like, halfway through it, I'm like, no. This isn't it.
Well, this is wonderful. So what can you tell me about the album that you did? Because I'll have to tell you something. Nobody's ever given me a copy or let me hear what you have there. But it was a bunch of songs you did in something called the Blue House Studios. Where was that?
Yeah, we actually got a studio audience together and did about 14 songs with just the acoustic piano. And it was kind of like a listening, you know, quality control listening thing. And it turned out so well that we ended up putting it on a CD.
Uh-huh.
And putting it on iTunes so that our fans could purchase it. But now we're in the studio. Actually, we finished up 14 songs. We're going to go and record 5 more songs on a new project. But the Blue House was just like I wouldn't say a high-quality demo, but
yeah.
It was just a taste of what the War and Treaty is about.
Yeah, I was almost getting the impression that the War and Treaty was about a lot of live...
Yes.
Live music and not a lot of studio recordings, but is that what's in the future? You're going to do a studio
yeah.
album?
The studio album has turned out very, very well. The challenges with that is that we are both live performers.
Mm-hmm.
So being able to capture what we do live has been a struggle for us. We've scratched at least three or four different studio sessions just to get the sound, you know.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be a challenge. Unless you have everybody already, you have a team already picked out, you got to have a good engineer that'll capture those two voices of yours. And
yep, that's been a struggle.
Yeah, and try to treat them right, because it's...
Yep.
That's a struggle too. you want to capture the same magic that the audience feels.
Exactly, right. And that is definitely, because it's always about the audience and always about the fans and what they feel at these shows. And when they can't get it on the CD, it's the biggest letdown ever.
Well, I hope that Mike doesn't mind me hogging you for this interview, because you know you're speaking for both of you too.
I can pull him in at any second. You just let me know when.
Safe in your hands, and it's all a part of your plan. Shirt, the crease to my blue jeans, the silver buckle to my belt. You're the tree on the side of my boot when I'm following you. Yeah, you're the syrup to my pancakes, the ketchup on my french fries, the smoke that parades off the grill. And when I think you've done enough, you keep giving still. Whoa. Well dries up and famine hits the land, and I just wanna give up. I know you still have a plan.
Your ways are higher than an eagle can soar. When I come with so little, you bring more, you bring more. So
Let me ask you a little bit of, since we talked about recordings, what can you tell me a little bit about how you got signed to Island or Polydor? Did you get a phone call one day saying that we'd like to introduce you to some people, or?
Wow, it was very interesting. I was in high school. I was in the 12th grade, I believe, and uh-huh. I was in my English class, morning class, and the principal called my name over the intercom and said, "You have a phone call from a such and such from some record company or something like that." And I was like, everybody in the class was like, "Oh my God." They knew I'd done the big break. And so, of course, I had to get them. I got on the phone. I was like, "You guys have to talk to my parents," because I was underage. And we went to New York. And it was with this, at the time, a production company I was dealing with called Hush Productions. They had a bunch of big artists in the 90s. And they ended up taking me to Island Records, where David Segerson, who was the president at the time,
right,
took on the project as his pet project, I would say. And the oldest Clyburn was my A&R, and it just put me through artist development, which I miss so much for artists nowadays. They don't have it, but it was so essential to my development as an artist, you know. And we started doing the artist development things and got in the studio, and right in the middle of that, Sister Act 2 came. So
Okay, so one came before the other.
And oh, then, yeah.
What was the impact of the scene where you and Lauryn Hill were sitting at a piano singing, and did that boost your I don't know, your visibility at that time?
I would have to say no and yes, because at that time, music, you know, you had, of course, things like The Sound of Music and all those musicals before. This was actually, if you really think about Sister Act 2 and what it meant to, you know, our culture, it was actually the first time something like that was done outside of Sister Act 1, but with this time with kids.
Yeah.
And the record industry didn't really connect how record and movie work together, I don't think, at that time.
Okay, yeah.
You know, now it's like, if you're an artist, you're going to get in the movie, you're going to have a makeup deal, you're going to do the 360 deal thing that you have to do. But it didn't impact. I wouldn't say that I felt the impact.
Yeah, but I tell you, that's very memorable, the way you said you had the Broadway director that
Mark Shaman.
That's it. I'm sorry, I forgot his name right off the bat. I have so many things in my head right now. But yeah, was that shot on a soundstage, or were you actually in some kind of cathedral there?
No, we were on a soundstage with San Francisco to shoot some of the movie as well.
Yeah.
In L.A. with the Universal Studios, and it was just great. I mean, just to think about the whole, it's like I can remember it like it was yesterday.
Well,
since I realized everything that happened, you know.
Since you and I walked back through that door of Sister Act 2, I'll ask you one other thing. What were the auditions for that like? Did you have a lot of, I don't know, divas, young teenage divas coming in there try to audition for these parts?
There were over, Lauren and I met in New York because we auditioned in New York. We beat out about 900 girls in New York.
That's great.
And then they flew us to California where there was another 300 girls we had to audition against.
Oh, my gosh.
So some of those girls that you saw in the movie were actually girls that auditioned with us but didn't get the leading roles.
Oh.
I was one of the girls, too, because I auditioned for the leading role. And like I said, that, you know, Whoopi just fell in love with us together because we were hanging out with buddies. I was like, oh, you guys have to be in this role together, in this scene together. So it was a lot of competition.
Everybody got along, this ensemble that you had?
Everybody got, it was like magic. Everybody got along.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that. Yeah. You always want to hear that. You don't want to hear any fighting going on. No Jennifer Love Hewitt acting like she does on your character.
None of that. She's the sweetest.
Yeah, so I've heard. Yeah. Among others, she's one of the big stars to come out of it, isn't she?
Oh, yeah. Yep, yeah, she's great.
So what, there's that piano again, I think.
You hear that cello and the
Yeah, that really does sound good. when we're done here, you have to put the phone up so we can hear what they're doing. But
oh, yeah.
I was curious, you know, I've always wanted to ask you about the climactic scene in that movie where you're all recreating a singing competition.
Mm-hmm.
What went in behind that? Because it looked so realistic. Did they? Was it something that you all gathered an audience there to say, "Hey, we're going to shoot a scene that looks like we're in a competition"? Or,
well, actually, it was, interestingly enough, it really was a competition. Everybody sang their songs full out. We got to see it. We got to feel that they did sound better than us, some of them.
Because it sounded like they mentioned a lot of real schools that actually were in the competition.
Yeah, they did, and it was interesting. We met a lot of the people that were in the choirs and things like that, so it was very real to us.
But the scenes where you're all singing your number, did you have to rehearse that and shoot it in a different way? Or?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we had to do that, and the choreographer at the time was Michael Peters, who had done Thriller.
Oh, yeah.
When I was like, oh, my God, I cannot believe him. I'm one step closer to meeting Michael Jackson. Yeah, so we did a lot of choreography, and I wasn't anybody's dancer, so I was I had to work a little harder than the others.
Oh, so when did you get to meet Michael?
Michael Peters?
When did you get to meet Michael Jackson?
I never got to meet Michael Jackson. Never.
Yeah. He was, that would have been, Michael Peters, yes, very, very legendary, especially, he did so many videos for a lot of performers in the 80s.
Yes, he did, yeah.
Wow.
That was awesome.
Well, how nice. Okay, well, we're done. We can get rid of Michael, and then he can... I got plenty of him on tape. No. So tell me about the rehearsals. How often are you doing these?
Well, we rehearse twice a week. Well, Michael and I rehearse every day. 2 to 3 hours a day. And when we bring in Tillman and Kate, they come at least once a week. Kate just started playing with us before she moves to Denver.
Boulder.
She's moving to Boulder. And so we rehearse a lot. I mean, we have to because of the harmonies, and it's just sometimes us and the piano.
You have to sound tight, and you have to be very on pitch and everything, yeah.
Yeah, and we have to give the illusion that there's more going on than just our voices.
Are there any particular songs that you might be able to share? What sticks out as a very memorable or one of your favorite ones that you're rehearsing right now?
That is so hard.
It's hard, huh, because you have all of them.
My goodness.
You want to treat them like your babies. You don't want everybody...
They're so hard, and he comes up with these songs all the time. There's one at Veritas Liberat Bitvals, which is one of our classical Americana kind of songs.
Okay.
And that sticks out. We have one, Criminal, that everybody loves. It's about us loving each other and him being a criminal.
I remember that song, yeah.
We're stealing each other's hearts.
So you played that on the album then, huh?
Yeah, we played that one. And then we have some up-tempo songs that are just fun songs, like Let's Get Lost and Maryland, which is a song that is about Maryland, not about it being our home away from home, because we're always talking about leaving Maryland because we want to get closer to something, closer to the music industry.
I remember Michael, he has a history, growing up in Cleveland and then eventually made his way over there. Where did you come from?
I'm from Washington, D.C., but I was raised in Maryland.
Oh, so you know the area all too well then.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. So
yep.
What's it been like growing up out there all those years?
Maryland is it's a beautiful place. I'm sorry.
No problem.
Sinuses, that's the first sign that when it gets warm here, the sinus season here is crazy. But it's a great place for seafood.
Uh-huh.
It's a great place for... to raise a family. My family is here.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a beautiful place. It's an older community, an older state, but it has a lot of history here.
You said raising a family. I know that you have a blended family. You have a child, and he brought two, and then baby legend makes four.
Yeah.
So how have you included or balanced raising your kids as your musical career takes off or gets much busier? How do you do this?
It's a hard balance because Legend is three, and thank goodness we have a great support team, but it isn't easy. We want to take him on the road, and sometimes we have to leave him home, but he's at that age now when you leave him for 2 days, which is the max for us. He's like, what happened? Where have we been?
Yeah.
He's very expressive, and we've thought about homeschooling and doing all those different things, but it's always about the kids and what's best for them.
Well, I always had a dream of doing that, but I never regretted raising a family instead of pursuing a career in music or in the arts. But luckily, that has a way of coming around later on in life. So,
oh yes, it does. And that's first. Family is first, and if it's God's will, it works itself out.
So you pray about this a lot, so you know where to keep going.
Oh yeah, I pray about it a lot, and then when I don't hear anything, I just stand still.
How do you now you as as a believer with it sounds like the two of you have a strong faith, which is great, and I wanted to know how that how do you hear him answer?
We were just talking about that today. We were like, okay, we want to move, we want to make some moves, so what do you do? And he said, we look at the gifts that he's given us, we look at the opportunities that come to us, and then it's something as simple as moving. We were talking about moving to California, looking at Nashville and different things like that. When it comes to things like that, it goes back to what you are responsible for. You look at your children, how would that affect them? You look at your marriage, you look at your pockets,
yes,
your money, how that would, all that, and then you use wisdom. God gives us this great gift of wisdom along with the ability to come to him in prayer, and you say, okay, what's the best decision for one, the family, and that's how the decisions are made.
Well, it's kind of nice seeing some of the video that you shot when I tell you that you're in a vehicle traveling. Sometimes it looks like you're on a bus or a motorhome. Is that going on too?
Well, we actually But here's another God thing. We actually were like, we need a conversion van for the road because we have the kids and summertime's coming and we want to travel with them. So we went out and got a conversion van. It's like a little, our own vision of a tour until we can get the big tour bus that we want.
How nice.
So we have, it's a conversion van and it's really nice and televisions and a lot of space for the kids. So,
so this was something that you felt that, it was a good thing to have. You didn't just like run into that hastily to buy or rent or whatever you're doing with it.
No, we thought about it. We prayed about it, and Michael got it one morning. It was in his face, and we were like, "Okay, there it is." Does he need to? God doesn't need to bang us on top of the head and say, "This is it." You know.
Your love has taken me over.
Ooh, I'm letting go of my preservation.
I'm walking out on a dark sea to a place that has no end because we broke the cast around our hearts. We're the light pulled out of the dark. The glass is half empty. The one in the mirror looking at we
is now the best thing that's ever happened to me.
We broke the cage.
Best thing that's ever happened to me.
We're letting go.
Best thing that's ever happened to me.
We broke the cage.
Best thing that's ever happened to me.
We talked a little bit about your music career with a label, and now you're doing stuff on your own. Do you like being in control of your art, your music?
It has advantages and it has disadvantages. I always say that I think the advantages that a lot of that we have as artists nowadays is we can talk to our fans directly. If you put up a post, your fans are right there. I think the disadvantage is you don't have marketing and the communication skills, sometimes the social media savvy of knowing how to approach them, of knowing what kind of fans you have. I mean, when you're with the label, they do the research for you. They can tell you what kind of makeup your fans like to wear, where they live, how much they make, you know,
yeah.
What kind of merchandise they would like. So these are all the things that the disadvantages. We don't have that information, but also the other side of that is you can go get the training to get the information. So you have to really invest in not just merchandising and music, but you have to invest in the business side of it more so than ever nowadays, you know, as an artist.
Yeah. So that some of the success you had at least three good songs that appeared on Billboard, which is nice, or R&B. The label is responsible for that, so they probably figure, well, if you're not going to bring in more big hits, we may have to do another album, or we'll just drop you. I don't know if that's how it goes with a lot of artists. Some of them just walk away, you know.
Yeah, I just walked away from mine, and then I went on to, you know, become a writer with Sean Combs, who's people knew P. Diddy, Puffy, as a writer, you know, who's a great influence, and I learned a lot from him on the business side.
Yeah.
You know, it was just something I chose to walk away from. Hindsight being 2020, it was a great decision, you know, and like I said, the advantages I have now is now I have to learn the entire business. Artists in the 90s and 80s and 70s weren't as business savvy as artists are now.
Wow. That's, I was giggling when you said you mentioned Sean Combs' different names and everything, because that's how I felt. I felt that Mike can relate to that. He's changed his name about 16 times, too. You know, it was like John Cougar Mellencamp, you know, and then you Puff Daddy, P. Diddy.
Yeah. It comes with being I think it comes with the genius mind.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And then his clothing line is, we'll get to that. You know, maybe Mike should have a signature glasses maybe or something.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah, we're looking at that. It's a part of the merchandising.
You always wonder what he's known for. He's going to be saying, you know, he's always got those giant glasses on his head.
Oh, yeah, with no lenses in them.
No. Oh, so he could scratch his eye when
he can cry without, and just put the tissue straight in.
But I used to enjoy looking at that, but he was calling himself Mike Ivory, then we started calling himself Michael Trotter with the junior on it, and then we progressed, you know, long story short, it as Trotter and Blunt.
Yeah, we did
Blunt,
that.
Excuse
nine
me.
9 years apart, and yeah.
And now you're the Warren Treaty. And I was just telling my wife, I think this is these
I
are
think
the.
This is it.
Yeah, I think this is it. This sounds like you these you know these roller coaster, these twists and turns that you have on the road. It you got to get there somehow.
You got to get there, and you know, and you put it out there, and that's the advantage of being, you know, independent. The label is not going to take those kind of risks. You know who you are, or you don't. You know, we don't give you time to figure it out. But not, it's good.
But not only do you pray, but you let the your fans, your audience. Your intimate audience on social media. It sounds weird, but they really do tell you the truth. Even though they're complimenting you and giving you all positive pats on the back, that's really that's got to be encouraging to you to keep moving on.
Oh yeah, and that's your research. You know, you look at where you should do shows and where you should book your next tour, and your fans will tell you, you know, come here, come there, we'll support you. And then the great thing is, you can get volunteers in these different cities, and people want to see you win. And I think that's the biggest thing that we have, the advantages, is that the fans they're so involved.
Yeah,
and they can touch you, and you have to touch them back because it's social. Unlike before, the record companies created an image, and people bought into the image.
So don't stand up there in your ivory tower or whatever it is, and just put out your stuff there. and not be afraid to put something out there that you're not quite finished with. You know,
So
as I wrap things up here, I'd love to keep talking with you, but I want to hog the time from everybody else. You know, you're going to have to apologize that I'm taking your voice away, because you're going to have to rest for a while.
It's okay, Michael. He's right here. I know you want to close out with us to say hello to him.
Okay, let me ask you this question as we wrap it up. What advice would you give to somebody, not necessarily new getting in the business, but maybe they've been struggling for a while and they you know, they have ups and downs and they're not sure where they're going.
Mm-hmm.
What's the best advice you can give somebody that wants to keep moving on, but they're having a tough time with it?
And in the music industry, you and specifically, or just
if say they want to become, you know, their own artist and have a group of fans and stuff like that, but it's just not going the way. Do you think that maybe they're pushing too hard in one direction? What do you suppose is going on?
I would say to them that you're an enterprise. You and I talked just a second ago about the beauty of social media and how you can get to your fans and the feedback that they give you, that you are your own industry. You know, you create the industry inside of you, and you don't have to, because of the way it's shaped now, you don't have to fit into a box. You know, you take your fans, whether it's 100 of them, and you manage them, and you connect with them, and you nurture them, and you cultivate a relationship with them, and you look at it with different eyes. If you have 100 people who are following you and who are supporting you, then you start something like a web, get them on something where they're, you know, giving you money to help with, like the Kickstarters and all the different things that they have. If you have 100 people who believe, they believe, and it's like a wildfire. At least they know 2 people who will believe. You know, now you have 300 people who believe, and just let it go. You know, just let it keep trickling down and be patient.
Should you not be so prideful as to put your hat out there to raise money on a crowdsourcing thing?
I don't think you can have pride when the music, when your gift, none of it belongs to us.
Right.
You know, it's not ours to hoard and have pride about. And if you want to get your music out there and you want people to connect with it, then they're going to have to see some vulnerability. That's what makes us artists. We're vulnerable. We put our lives in songs.
Yes.
We talk about it, you know, so we're vulnerable. And we have to learn to be vulnerable in business as well.
Well, I've seen how the two of you put it out there, and you're very, you two are so talented, and as well as Caitlin and oh gosh, what's his name?
Tillman.
Tillman. Apologize. Mm-hmm. You know, I should have written it down so I don't.
That's okay.
I get to talk, and so. But I love the way you've done what you've done with your music, and that's the most important thing. You know, I don't have anything to do with it, and I'm very proud of you two.
Well, Well, thank you so much for always supporting what we do.
Oh, but yes.
Even with Ivette Cares and Michael's struggles with, you know, him having PTSD and being an artist with PTSD and the support that you've given us.
Yeah.
With all of our changes.
I'll have to ask him how. I'll have to ask him how Ivette Cares and any of the other things, because he made me an ambassador, and yet I don't know what we're doing with that lately. So, you know, because it's a very important thing.
Oh, it's very important, and he's won gotten all kind of attention from the VA with it, and they've given him a congressional award.
Oh, did they? That's wonderful.
Yeah, they gave him a congressional award. So I think, you know, once the music lays its foundation, which it's, you know, doing slowly with the support of the fans, that's something that that's really our focus.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Tanya, so nice to talk to you.
Okay. Well, we thank you for just taking the time out to do the interview on the War and Treaty and
absolutely
the music and everything. So.
Okay, you got it. Tanya, looking forward to seeing you when you come out to L.A.
Okay, we'll let you know when.
Okay.
Okay.
Take care.
Thank you.
God bless.
Bye-bye.
And there you go. That's Tanya. And she hung up the phone before I got a chance to say to Mike. She said she was going to pass it off. But that's perfectly fine. Tanya is an amazing guest and perfect for this show, along with her husband, Michael Trotter Jr. And I'm waiting for the day where I can present them to you as a couple on the radio, maybe in a live setting. I'd love to have them both where they may be able to play some of their music live for you here on this show. What a wonderful treat it is to have them as my guests for Strong Rider on the Radio. They always have Hall of Fame status. I'm going to have to leave you now. Please visit thewarandtreaty.com for information on their music and their tour dates and all things about Mike and Tanya. You're going to love it. And while you're at it, please visit strongrider.com and you can hear past episodes, including Michael Trotter's interview, plus this one of Tanya if you missed all of it. And until next time, my name is Dean Olson saying, please put your best pen forward and let's all be strong writers together. Go forth, have a fine weekend, and we'll talk to you later. Goodbye now.
You've been listening to Strong Writer on the Radio with your host, Dean Olson, on the amazing Women and Men of Power, world's leading positive programming network powered by Raven International.